Hello, hello. Welcome to Pod Bless Texas. I'm Lillian Salerno here at our temporary world headquarters out in Collin County, Texas, and here with my colleague and friend, Kendall Stetter.
Hi, how are you?
Doing okay. What's going on?
Hey, we're doing good. I mean, I'm really excited about this episode. We have some of my favorite people coming on.
Yes, our third mic is the amazingly talented Brandy Voss.
Yay!
Thanks, Kyle.
Last cycle for
Supreme Court. And the primary didn't squeak through that one, unfortunately, but you are still here. You are in the fight. How are things going for you down in McAllen?
Good. It's hotter than hell down here, but it's good. You know, we're just hunkering down and staying inside and trying not to go crazy at the same time, but it's good.
Forget about the Valley a lot when they talk about Texas. I mean, we haven't really even done much with the Valley since we've started the show.
I love the Valley, but it's far.
What did you grow up in McAllen, or did you find your way to McAllen?
No, I grew up in Houston.
Oh, okay.
So, but I came down here about almost 16 years ago. After I got married, my ex-husband was from here. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I mean, for people who may not have followed you in the primary, I mean, you're just such an impressive person. And now that that's over, you know, Lily and I were lovable losers, and we particularly love people that when they get knocked down, they don't stay down. They get up and keep fighting. And you're actually in the news lately because you're one of the attorneys that are fighting to knock these Green Party folks off the ballot that didn't file correctly, right?
Yes, that's correct. I was lead counsel for Judge Amy Clark Meacham's case.
Coincidentally enough,
it's going to be our guest today. Who's running for Supreme Court Justice here?
Chief Justice.
Okay, I keep saying, yeah, Chief Justice of the Texas Supreme Court.
She's not only the first woman to ever be nominated for Chief Justice of the Texas Supreme Court, but she'll be, as a result, the first woman to ever hold the role.
Is that right?
That is right.
Right. I think she's actually the first woman to ever run for it, which is amazing. And she'll make an amazing Chief Justice. I've gotten to know her from the campaign trail, and I just love her, and y'all are going to love her.
How did you survive a statewide, dude? I couldn't do it, man.
Lots of coffee. It's a big state, and there's just no way that you can get out to all the places. I mean, there's no way that you can do what Beto did and hit all 254 counties on a shoestring budget, which is, you know, judicial races. It's just impossible to raise that kind of money that you need to be able to go everywhere. So
maybe that explains the cocaine epidemic at the RNC this week. I need something to keep them going.
Something.
Oh yeah. God. They tell lies. They tell lies. They tell lies. Cocaine.
If these statewide seats are more manageable in light of COVID, in a sense, because I mean, no one's expectation is that you're going down to every Democratic club around the state. I mean, when you're traveling the kind of miles that you have to travel, I mean, maybe it's easier right now, which would be great for Amy.
Yeah. I think, you know, a lot more people are online now because you have to be. Otherwise, you're just cooped up and you're alone in your house. We were doing a lot of digital before, and that was primarily what I spent my campaign funds on for the primary was the digital marketing. So now it's good that there are more people online and they are able to reach people that way. But there's something to be said for getting in front of people and speaking and shaking hands and making that connection personally. It's just irreplaceable. So
from your perspective, before we start the show too much, what do you from the Valley feel like we on Pod Bless Texas have not done enough of our due diligence focusing on in your area? Because we've talked about this before. We've been like, how do we get all over the state and do all kinds of stuff? And we've tried to. We've done a lot of Houston. We've done a lot of East Texas. We've done a lot of El Paso. We've never managed to get down to the Valley. What down there is interesting? What should we go cover down there?
There are already Democrats down there.
Well, I know, but like, that doesn't mean they behave. Eddie Lucio.
We're all Democrat down here pretty much. You know, we've got a lot of stuff going on. We have a fabulous butterfly center that unfortunately is right in the path of Donald Trump's wall. That's something that gets overlooked a lot. And then of course, you know, we've been in the news for not good things, unfortunately. The MPPs and the issues of asylum seekers being trapped at the border or on the other side of the border. That's, you know, 10 miles away from me. And we've been in the news, unfortunately, recently because we've had a COVID explosion down here. But we have a lot of cool things. We're close to the beach. That's a lot of fun. If y'all want to come down and do a show down here, I'll take you down to South Padre Island and maybe we can set you up at the Wanawana Beach Bar or something like that. That would be fun.
Oh, man, let's do a beach episode.
I love South Padre Island. I love it.
I hate sand.
He hates sand. So I love it down here. I mean, it's not my first home, but it's my home now. And I'll probably never leave. So
rumor mill tells me that there are some folks combining together to try to make sure the next speaker is from the Valley if the Dems flip the House. What do you think about that?
I think that'd be fabulous. I mean, you know, our elected officials are awesome, most of them. and so I think that would be great. You know, I was trying to be the first one in over 20 years to be on the Supreme Court, for the first resident of the Valley to be on the Supreme Court, because we don't have any representation of the Supreme Court.
We're going to get you there, whether you like it or not.
It really is abominable that the Supreme Court is situated like it is, so Dallas, Houston-centric, all white male, mostly white males, all Republican.
Right.
All Republican.
For 25 years or so.
Ugh. Right.
Well, anyways, well, you know, this has not been a very uplifting week, and we're doing our best to try to stay.
Breaking it.
Dude, did you watch the convention at all, Brandy?
The Republican convention.
So I watched, on accident, I watched a little bit of it. I tried not to watch it because it's like nails on a chalkboard. Mm-hmm. But I left the TV room one night. My daughter was sitting in there, and my husband was in there, and he flipped it on while I was out of the room. And so my daughter was sitting there and I come back in and there's Mike Pence on the TV. And I was like, oh God, what is she learning? And I said, Ella, are you watching this? And she's like, no, not really. But there was one thing that caught my attention. And I said, well, what is that? And she said, well, when they announced Mike Pence's wife. And I said, well, okay, what's interesting about that? She said, Mom, her name is Karen. I started dying laughing. Out of the mouths of babes.
how do you not get bored at a convention when Trump's speaking every single night?
Fascist.
He didn't even adopt a platform this year.
No, his platform is, I'm the only one that can save you from the mess that I've caused.
I saw an article in Business Insider that said they didn't pass a platform this year. Instead, they passed a statement that said they enthusiastically support Donald Trump and his agenda. That's their platform now.
He's running as an insurgent when he's the commander in chief. It's just so strange.
Riots in the street, re-elect me.
He's running against Democratic blue cities.
Nice.
Anyway, we're so glad to have you on, and
we also have another special guest that is going to be on this episode. We did a special segment that we're going to start doing pretty regularly. That's a grassroots spotlight for someone around the state of Texas that's a grassroots volunteer that's just doing some crazy killer work. And so we're going to have a little segment that we're going to do with Sisters United, Sherry Matula, down in the Houston area, where they're targeting non-voting women to turn them out. Have some really interesting progress, and we're going to get some updates from her on the great work they're doing there. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, so we have Supreme Court.
Amy Clark Meacham.
Amy Clark Meacham. Sherry Matula.
Brandy Boss.
Brandy Boss.
Lillian Salerno.
We're just rocking. But before we get started, let's hit the Louisiana hit by Hurricane Laura. Texas dodges a bullet.
Why'd you say it like that?
I don't know.
Lauda.
That's a friend of mine's.
Hurricane Lauda.
That's how you pronounce it when you're not speaking Laura. Anyway, that Hurricane Lauda was not as bad as we thought, except for the folks in Louisiana are having a hard time.
Thank God.
Yeah. I was really feeling for Houston. I just don't know what could have happened. And mostly, well, for the people, but also for our voting. We need all those votes in Harris County to win the state.
Was Laura going to hit the valley at all? I don't know how y'all are impacted by hurricanes ever.
Where I'm at in McAllen, we're about an hour and 15 minutes away from South Padre Island inland. So, you know, we get winds and rain, but it, you know, usually by the time it hits us, it's broken up enough where it doesn't really cause that much damage. Like the last storm that we had that came through, we had just some tree limbs down. But go 45 minutes over to Harlingen and they're underwater, you know, when a storm like that comes through. So
evacuate or any of that kind of stuff.
No. But Laura, I don't think was ever projected to hit us. I was really worried about Houston because it just seems like they're just having so much trouble getting the infrastructure in place to be able to drain all of those areas, and people that sometimes make it through the initial storm then later get flooded because the Corps of Engineers has to shift water around, and it's like, wait a minute, what happened?
We built an infrastructure. We didn't plan for this kind of climate crisis that was happening. So like, even you don't have infrastructure that's ready for it, and you haven't been plotting and planning for, you know, your destruction of the environment for decades, you know, what do you expect?
And you get 3 500 year floods in 3 years or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, next headline. Donald Trump accepts his renomination from the White House lawn with flags and fireworks violating the Hatch Act. And there was a lot of fear-mongering, basically telling his voters that they won't be safe if Joe Biden's elected, describing the scenes in the streets in major cities. And it was just terrible.
Quick clarification. The scenes in the streets of the country that he's currently president of, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Gotcha.
He mentioned Joe Biden 26 times throughout the speech, and the crowd, which was about 2,000 on the White House lawn, very few masks, no social distancing, lots of protesters outside. Not good.
I honestly couldn't stomach watching the whole convention. I really tried. I bounced in and out every night. I don't have that much to add in on it. It was as dystopian as I expected it to be. Gave me no optimism, none. I mean, it's the idea, when I watched people like Barack Obama and Joe Biden and them speak at the last week at the Democratic convention, it reminded me of what America could become. And then when you watch Donald Trump speaking, it reminds you of the terrible things our country has done. Like, there's just this complete flip on the head. Instead of optimism, it's regret that I feel like I'm watching the entire time I'm at.
I'm fearful.
Me too.
I'm fearful that even if more people go out and vote for Democrats, that he's got the chokehold on the threatening, especially new and minority voters, saying that he's going to have law enforcement at the polls, which makes people nervous. And then the entire shift to mail-in voting makes me very worried also. So I'm very depressed about it. That's my bad attitude today, because I watched it. It was a mistake.
What are we going to do if this guy wins?
We can't win.
Are we going to be political refugees, Brandi Voss?
I'm totally with you. Yeah. Totally with you.
Do you think Mexico will take us?
Right.
Mexico, Geneva.
If I were Mexico, every one of those Americans trying to come over, I'd separate them from their kids, and I'd lock their kids in cardboard boxes. I mean, I would be vindictive as shit if I were Mexico.
Unlike the U.S., Mexico's a Christian nation.
I guess that's just not what people who aren't garbage would do.
Did someone tell me that one of the Grahams did the invocation at the Republican convention, or is that a joke? Somebody was texting me last night. Billy Graham's relatives did the invocation. I'm just saying, after the son-in-law got...
Falwell. That was Falwell.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it was Bill. Okay, that was.
So maybe Billy Grunder. They're all the same.
Okay, anyway, I just, please.
Yeah, Falwell was just watching from the corner.
Bam!
And then the Washington Post had a piece that said, why conservative males like to watch. I was like, what?
Okay, for those who, hang on, now we have to talk about it. For those Sorry. Who didn't catch the story, Jerry Falwell, noted televangelist who started Liberty University. His son is now the head of, was the head of Liberty University. A big sex scandal kind of broke out where he was soliciting his pool boy to
have sex
with his wife while he watched regularly. That was a thing. And, you know, my thing is that, you know, you do whatever you want to do as long as you're consenting adults in the privacy of your own home, but you don't get to shame other people for their sexual preferences when other dudes are fucking your wife.
You really are right.
Exactly. It's the hypocrisy.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I just can't believe people.
So they canceled him out of the Republican convention because he was supposed to be speaking, and so he just was watching.
And there was a photo of him on a yacht. People that want to be involved in public life, they shouldn't go on yachts, really. Yachts will get you in trouble.
That's always been a life mantra of mine. That's why I don't know.
Oh, it didn't really. But anyway, there was a photo from a yacht where he had his pants unbuttoned and he had his arm around a young woman. That came out too. And I was like, oh man, that's smoke and fire. I mean, I knew something else was coming. The stories were out there that him and his wife were very manipulative to young people at Liberty University. Those of us who hate Liberty University have hated it for a long time because we've always felt like a lot of young people get sent there and not known that the, you know, what is it called? The foxes guarding the hen house over there. Because they're terrible people.
I mean, again, I literally don't care what people do. Like, that's one of the reasons, like, I've never pretended to be one of those, like, holier than thou people, because I most certainly am not. I mean, my issue is, like, when you start to condemn other people for the things they're doing while you're literally doing your own weird little nefarious stuff, too.
Yeah. But to 22-year-old students at a university and they're being solicitous and asking for sex and exchange for grades and stuff that was going on there.
Oh my
God. That was all part of it.
And I guarantee you that if you went back, you'd be able to find quotes from that guy talking about how same-sex marriage would lead to polygamy or would lead to bestiality when he was having polyamorous sexual relationships inside his marriage already.
I can't wait for the tell-all book from the wife. Just can't wait.
I can't wait for the tell-all book from the pool boy.
Oh, we want to on the show.
I have already reached out to the pool boy to try to get him on the show, guys. I'm really if we can get him on, we will do a breaking segment right into your podcast feed. It will be rated NA-17. Do not listen to it with your children.
Gosh, you know that he's got recordings and films.
Oh, you know he does.
People just do that kind of stuff. Anyway, that's been a lot of fun. All right, next sad headline. Wisconsin police in Kenosha to shoot Jacob Blake, an African-American man, in the back 7 times. And it's just been sad, sad days over and over. A friend of mine works for the governor of that I've served with in the Obama administration. He works for the governor in Wisconsin. And I've been texting with him all week just saying, I can't even imagine what it would be like to be in a state, because Madison's only about an hour and a half from Kenosha. And just see this every day, knowing that, you know, when you work in state government, I mean, this is all you do every day. All you do is race and riots. And I mean, people are burning cars and people are upset, which they absolutely have a right to. And then you get the next day a police report that says that this Jacob Blake is paralyzed and they actually have him handcuffed to the bed. And you're still having to deal with the first crisis, the second crisis as a state. And he, his name is Sam, and he's just like, it's the worst thing that you can ever see. Like, there's nothing they can do to calm because they just made mistake after mistake after mistake.
Well, also happening in this exact same town in Wisconsin was where you may have heard a 17-year-old opened fire on protesters, massacring them in the streets.
Kyle Rittenhouse.
got nothing but a thank you for being here from police, and they allowed him to go.
Yeah, and imagine if that would have been a young African American or Latino boy with a gun, they would have shot him on sight. Not even a question.
Imagine if they would have opened fire on these racist ass militias that are out protecting these statues. Suddenly it would have been a problem, right? But you can just go ahead and start picking off peaceful protesters in the streets.
Yeah.
It's just disgusting. And these people are stepping up and trying to defend them right now.
Yeah.
Like he's some kind of hero.
Yeah.
It's just disgusting.
Tucker Carlson defending him.
He's a piece of shit. He's a terrorist. I hope that guy's locked in jail for the rest of his life. Frankly, I hope that Wisconsin still has the death penalty. I'm just done with it. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I don't know about that, but yeah, I don't know if they have the death penalty, but I don't think he should be put to death. He's 17.
So you know, those people that he murdered were also really young.
I know. But I blame, this is again part of the Fox News problem. This is the only information certain parts of our society have is from Fox News. And you think this is what they're calling it, their action call is this. So I blame Fox News, boycott Fox News, boycott the advertisers.
This kid was 17, carrying a long rifle when the law was that you can't do it unless you're 18. Mm-hmm. And no one stopped and asked. No one, I mean, it's like, things like this are so freaking preventable if you just enforce the goddamn laws that are already in place. This is why people are having to advocate for stricter gun laws. Like, I'm one of these people from rural areas who for years have really teetered on this issue. Like, I am not someone that necessarily thinks you need really strict gun laws. But if you're not going to enforce the ones that are in place, everybody's about to start losing their access.
Yeah.
Like, there are people that are abiding by the law that think that this is all about them. It's not. It's about this 17-year-old kid, Kyle, who's just body counting the streets.
That's terrible.
It's disgusting.
Brandy, you're a mom of a 16-year-old and who I know is probably an awesome Democrat, but I mean, do you think the parents have liability, and you're a good lawyer, do you think the parents have liability with this 17-year-old as the parents of this kid?
You know, I'm a creative lawyer could put together a case of, you know, if it was the parents' gun, you know, and they didn't, you know, take care to lock it up. You know, I mean, you could maybe make it some sort of theory out of that. I don't think that we have very many cases like that in Texas that I've seen. But I think that it's a good idea to make the parents liable if your kid gets a hold of your gun. And that's something that could be statutorily enacted and probably should be, because it would make parents be more careful about keeping guns away from their kids. You know, when the El Paso shooting happened, you know, as somebody who lives on the border, you know, I couldn't help but think, gosh, you know, what if he had chosen McAllen? You know, what if he had picked our Walmart to drive down and try to attack Hispanic Americans and Mexican Americans in my community? It could have been my friends. It could have been my family. And it just makes me sick.
You know what's even more terrifying about it, though, Brandy? When that happened in El Paso, Republicans said, wow, this is such a tragedy, and we're sad that it happened. We're not going to take action, but we're sad it happened. Here we are a year later. It happens on the streets in Wisconsin, and there are literally factions of the Republican Party applauding this kid for mass murdering people in the streets. And we're supposed to act like people have legitimate point of views and we're supposed to respect their opinions? It's a stupid fucking opinion.
Yeah, it's heinous, really. Just sad days for so many families. And, you know, how is an African-American family supposed to tell their kids that they're safe in this country with this kind of stuff? I mean, watching the police shoot that Jacob Blake in the back in front of his kids, I mean, you know, it's so disturbing.
Well, that's the thing that really like also sticks in my craw is, you know, I've, for the last couple of years, I took a break during the campaign, but I've been teaching at UTRGV in the criminal justice department. And all my students are youngsters who want to go on to be police officers or border patrol agents. They want to go into law enforcement. And so we have this long segment on use of force. And, you know, how do you feel threatened with deadly force when someone is running away from you and you shoot them in the back? Like, that's just use of force 101. You don't do that. And how many times do we have to see this happening over and over and over again before the police departments actually get serious about doing some real training? You know, I try to teach them when they're in my classes, but, you know, it only goes so far because then they go into the academies and they learn there. And they need to have implicit bias training.
Right.
You know, they really need that.
I mean, I understand Amber Geiger. Other than her, have we seen any of these police officers that are murdering civilians? Have any of them been women? Other than Amber Geiger?
Not very many.
Because, like, I wonder, there's this real toxic masculinity feature in it, because I think about when I was growing up, and, you know, I don't know if it's rural or whether it's male. It's one of the two, I think, where, you know, we had this, like, this kind of, like, idea of, like, I wish somebody tried to break up in my house. Mm-hmm. I wish somebody tried to come and steal my truck. I wish they'd come in. You know, like, this idea that, like, I even find myself falling into it sometimes because it's this mentality you're raised with where it has now transitioned this percentage of the population to think that if someone wrongs you in any way, the appropriate response is extreme violence or murder. And that's the acceptable response. This is what happens to you if you come at me because I'm so fucking big and bad. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's the argument I've been having with my family about all of this nonstop is we're in this family group chat where they feel like it's appropriate to send all these political memes. And they'll say things like, well, if you don't want to get shot, don't tear up somebody's property. When like...
I worked for a sheriff's department and was always surprised at the toxic masculinity and sort of like just didn't deal with it at that time because I was in my late 20s. And over the years, I mean, I do not think, and you're not going to agree with me, if you look at the statistics, males under the age of 26 shouldn't have guns. That would get rid of 80% of it. But if that is something, just like insurance for males when they're cars. I mean, it is a biological thing where they don't, their brains don't develop. I have a son that's 22. Their brain is just off, and then it's not. And they come, and if in a society where we're making handguns and Fox News and movies, and where we think it's okay, they can't handle what we've given them. And I feel like we as a society are preventing them from hurting themselves and others. You may not have been that male, but there are so many males, they get there. And then you look at the stats and over 85% of all the shootings are coming from this population.
Well, I mean, my counter to that, you're putting 18-year-olds in the military.
I know.
And you're saying that
that's where they're supposed to go.
Well, I'm just saying like
when they want to shoot, they go there.
You know, I tend to be of the opinion that once you're an 18-year-old, like once you're an adult, you should have all the rights of an adult. And that should include buying booze and stuff like that. But like, you know, I mean, clearly we're going to have to move to something stronger than what I'd want to do because we can't enforce what we have.
No, we certainly can. All right. Next headline. Professional athletes go on strike to protest police violence. The Milwaukee Bucks were first to strike, refusing to play in support of Jacob Blake. The rest of the NBA followed, calling off all the championship games on Wednesday night. And some are saying they're going to strike for the rest of the playoffs. But that was a lot. What did you think, Brandy, about that? The strike?
Well, I'm not a big NBA fan. I usually only watch Texas A&M football as my sport, and I watch cycling. But you know, I think that it shows that as a nation, we're changing. People are paying attention to what's going on and they're speaking up. And, you know, if you look at the way that people are reacting to the NBA taking steps to protest versus the way Colin Kaepernick was treated when he first started taking knee and then couldn't get a contract, I think it shows that we're evolving, and that's a good thing. So
I'm proud of
it. I hope we are.
It seems like we have this culture that we've created where that I'd say we as in white people have kind of created where it's like people of color are great when they're performing for us. But whenever you open your mouth, we suddenly have a problem with what you have to say and you should sit down and shut up. And like this, I mean, sports is, I think, the prime example of that, but it's not the only one. I mean, it's exemplified, I think, in our entertainment industry as well. But, you know, like how long have we let these overwhelmingly African-American leagues like have to pretend like nothing's happening in their own communities and they try to speak out about it and suddenly factions of the community are angry? Well, if you liked that person when they were dancing for you, then you should like that person enough to listen to what they have to say.
Right. I'm so impressed by LeBron James, King James, not only doing what the speaking he's done about this, but also putting money where his mouth is. And he's, him and some of the league's all-stars have been giving money to hire poll workers in predominantly Black communities because they know how many lines, how much people are going to have to stand in line, and they're actually putting money in to trying to do infrastructure in some of these large polling locations where people were having to wait like 6 and 8 hours. So yeah, that means they're translating it into votes, which is the only way we're going to change this.
And there's not even like a barrier of how far is too far. I mean, like it happens with like Colin Kaepernick in football and it happens with NBA teams, but even a NASCAR driver named Bubba tries to speak up and suddenly that guy's speaking out too much. I mean, like it is so blatantly the color of their skin that they have a problem with. I mean, it's just gross, man. I'm done with it now.
Racism is real. Last headline, Chris Hollins, the county clerk for Harris County, sent out how many ballots?
Here is my understanding of the situation. There has not been a lot of information out about it.
Just came out today.
Yeah, so Chris Hollins, who was appointed as the county clerk in Harris County upon the retiring of Diane Troutman due to health reasons. Chris Hollins came in and he has said that he wanted to send 2.4 million mail-in ballots to every registered voter in Harris County as a response to COVID. He facilitates elections. It's his right to decide to do that. The chief elections administrator in the state of Texas is now trying to block Chris Hollins from being able to do that. So there is a bit of a throwdown right now happening electorally in Harris County. So that's where we're at. What do you think about it, Brandy?
You know, I mean, there's no reason why everyone can't get a mail-in ballot for themselves, and then they have to decide whether or not they meet the criteria, which it has been made, frankly, confusing by the Texas Supreme Court and their interpretation of the statutes, in my opinion. I worry because of our Attorney General's threats to prosecute people who improperly use a mail-in ballot. And so I really don't understand why we can't all vote by mail. It just doesn't make any sense to me why it's just so stupid. The president votes by mail. Come on. So.
Yeah, their rationale, I'm reading the letter that they wrote back to Chris Hollins, the county clerk, and they say, you know, at a minimum, sending an application to every registered voters implies that they have an ability to vote by mail.
An application. It's not even a ballot.
Right. Yeah. So it's just, yeah.
Yeah. So here's,
they're going to clog it up. Clog it up for others.
Here's what I think about it. I think that forever we are looking for Democrats that are willing to throw down and willing to fight and actually deliver some democracy after we fight to try to get things to happen. And Robert, to be honest, I didn't expect it from Chris Hollins. I know and like the guy, but I didn't expect him to be somebody that's going to throw down. But this is him throwing down, and I am all here for it, Chris Hollins. You keep throwing down. Yeah. I'm here to support it. I think we need more Democrats that are willing to stick their neck out and throw down on important issues. And people having access to a ballot is an important issue. So tip of the hat to you, Chris Hollins. You're killing it.
You're killing it. Yeah, very, very happy with that. All right, that was Hit the Hammer. And when we come back, we'll cut. catch up with Sherry Matula from Sisters United and the awesome Amy Clark Meacham, who's running for
Chief Justice of the Texas Supreme Court.
She'll be the first. She's the first woman
to ever run.
She'll be the first woman Chief Justice when we elect her, and she's a badass.
She's a complete badass. And so it's one of the most important elections on the ballot this year that you have not heard of. Chief Justice of the Supreme Court will be able to oversee the court when we are inevitably fighting about redistricting. So it'll be crazy important. So make sure that you stick around. Welcome back to Pod Bless Texas. With us today, featuring a brand new segment that we have on Pod Bless Texas, highlighting the great work that our grassroots volunteers are doing around the state, we have Sherry Matula with Sisters United Alliance. Yay!
Welcome!
And we have you. You are part of our Zoom meeting from Houston, correct?
Correct.
All right. We're so glad you guys didn't get hit in that storm.
Yes, I'm really concerned about Louisiana having gone through so many hurricanes, and my husband and I live close to the coast, so my heart goes out to them, and whatever we can do to help, you know, we certainly will. So
look, Sherry, you've been creating quite a ruckus around the state. I know we've heard about you a lot from my capacity with the TDP, and right, there's a lot of buzz going on about the work that you've done. For people who aren't familiar with you or the work that Sisters United Alliance has been doing, give everybody a quick recap, because it's pretty impressive.
Thank you. Back in 2014, across Harris County, we lost over 20,000 identified Democratic women who did not show up to vote for Wendy Davis and Letitia Vanderpute. And after that happened, another dear friend of mine, Diane Mosher, and I got together to create what we wanted to do as far as three mailers being sent out to women who were not voting in the prior two elections to get them back to the ballot box to vote. And in 2016, we executed that program, and out of 89,000 women, we turned out 37,000 of them.
Wow.
So anyway, that was with three mailers and a lot of support from the party and from other like-minded people in Harris County. So in 2018, very sadly, I lost my dear friend Diane Mosher right after the state convention. She passed away very suddenly. So we reorganized, and I got together a team of, there are only five of us that actually do this. And we have one absolutely outstanding consultant, Diana Patino, who knows how to target the women down to every single last one that we have. She is an absolute genius at it. And so what we have done is, in 2018, we said, you know what, let's just go for broke and let's go ahead and expand out to the four surrounding counties along with four rural counties and see what happens and see if it really is what we kind of call the magic bullet for this. And so we did, and we expanded out the program to 122,000 women. And in the off-year election, we still turned out 36% total, even across the rural counties, the suburban counties, and Harris County was almost 40%. And when we did that, we turned out 44,000 women, which flipped several House seats, which helped flip Lizzie Fletcher's seat in Congressional District 7, and it seated all of the Democratic 1st and 14th Court of Appeal judges. So we cleaned the House in Harris County. There is not a single Republican left in a countywide office. And we elected Lena Hidalgo. Yay!
Well, a little bit of clarification. So when you say that you're targeting women, you're not just doing what people typically do, which is going and pull the scores, figure out who they are, and go after them. Who exactly are you targeting whenever you're doing
it? I know this sounds hard to believe, because most campaign people go, whoa, they're not going to show up to vote. No, 75% of our targets are registered women who have never voted, 25% have
Donald Trump. They haven't voted.
Well, they literally have not voted ever, period. And they've been sitting in the system for a while, but no one has reached out to them. 25% have voted once, but only in 2012. And they have not voted in any primaries. We are very particular about how we create our database and what we do. And we send them three mailers that are very specific to them, which is bringing them in. Our Sisters United Alliance name was created for us to bring these women in to feel like they are part of a group that is doing something. And then from there, we, every single mailer has on the back of it all the information about going to go vote. My husband right now is sitting next to me working on the website so that every single county that we are working in will have their own voting information up. So any woman that receives that mailer that has the website on it can go to the website and get all the voting information for their county on the website. So we also do 3 live phone calls to them talking about voting information, and we go up on social media to about 18 different platforms with the same message.
And that's just huge. So y'all are just like 5 ladies who said, you know, why whenever we're going through the van, do we never talk to these people that are registered to vote, but we don't know what they are and they never vote? And y'all just took it upon yourself. You've been raising cash and turning them out in what, 30, 40% rates? That's huge.
I know. In Lizzie Fletcher's race in CD7, we turned out 51% of our targets in 2018.
Wow. So those mailers are specific to women, and it doesn't have anything to do with those districts. It's just, you're a Texan, you're a woman, we need.
Yes. And the very specific message that we have is to vote for all Democrats on the ballot. In other words, we had asked them to vote straight ticket in the past 2 previous elections, but without that, then we are asking them to please vote for every Democrat. Trust us. We know what we're doing. We are reaching out to them. Your vote is valuable. We are giving them a positive message of they count. Their vote is valuable. And here's how you go about exercising your right to vote.
Okay. And so there's a per vote, you've identified how many women in the state of Texas?
Total? There are actually, to be very honest, 1.3 million women who are registered to vote, who are likely Democrats across the state. But we can only touch so many. So we have made an ambitious goal of 600,000 across 13 counties, along with some wonderful rural counties who are, there's about 10 rural counties who we are doing also because we've had a relationship with them.
Which is a really interesting thought, because, you know, there's always this back and forth in our party about whether or not you should be working on persuasion or whether you should be working to turn out people who don't show up to vote. You know, the answer is probably a little bit of both. But it sounds like this piece is, I mean, 600,000, that's way more than what Beto lost by. I mean, like double what Beto lost by. I mean, you have the opportunity here to really make a dent just with this segment.
So we need to make sure people give you the funding you need to get this. And it's about $1.50 per vote, right?
Yes, it's $1.50 per woman that is being targeted, which is unheard of also, because we have already paid for, to be very honest, our consulting costs. And you all know all the time with campaigns and everything else, you have this consulting cost amount that's quite expensive. We've already done that. We've already paid that and set that aside. And so to turn out these women right now is $1.50 per woman voter to do that. And we are right now very concerned, and I know you're up in the area, so we're concerned about our targets in Dallas County. We have 95,000 targets in Dallas County, and we right now, 4 weeks out before we have to make decisions, do not have the funding for those women. And we believe, based upon Harris County, that we can turn out close to 50% of those women, because Dallas, as you know, was the light at the end of the dark tunnel that went blue first and has had such an organized campaign, and all the work being done in Dallas County has been phenomenal and has led the way for the rest of us. But I do not want to leave these women sitting there untouched and not able to. And I think that's what we need the most right now is funding for Dallas County.
Wow. Well, Sherry Matula with Sisters United Alliance, if people wanted to follow you and the work that you and your 4 other women and your husband sitting next to you are doing, where can they go to follow or help?
I am on Twitter, and so is Sisters United. I'm just at Sherry Matula on Twitter, and I know Kendall, that's how I start talking to you. And then our Twitter is at United SUA. for the Twitter account, and we'll be posting up. We're also on Facebook, Sisters United Alliance, but the big one, of course, is sistersunitedalliance.com. And on that, on the donation page, we actually have a tag for Dallas County. So anything that is donated to Dallas County will go directly to Dallas County. We keep track of all the money and where it goes to make sure that it's all funded properly.
Right. That's just huge. And we're so appreciative of the work that you're doing and other grassroots folks all around the state that are kicking ass and taking names.
Right.
Thank you, and your team for all that y'all are doing.
Yeah. And everybody get out there, everybody that's listening, please go on the website and donate so we can make sure we get the amount of women needed so we flip the state and win these important state houses for sure. All right. Thank you, Sherry, and thanks for
thank you here. Too for letting me come on to your wonderful podcast that everybody talks about all the time.
Well, thank you.
Good. I'm glad that people are talking about it. Hopefully half of it's good. Bye, Sherry. We really appreciate you.
Bye. Thank you.
Welcome back to Pod West Texas. We're so excited today to have our special guest joining us, Amy Clark Meacham, who's running for the Texas Supreme Court Chief.
Yay!
So excited to have you. And where do we? Where are you zooming in from?
Sure. So I'm zooming in from my house in Austin, Texas. I'm a local trial judge here. I'm a district court judge for the 201st District Court. It's a civil and family court, and I'm the civil presiding judge. But since March, all of us have been holding court from our homes. We have court backgrounds, and we have full day hearings after you guys today. I have a family court hearing this afternoon. And so all day, every day, I'm holding court virtually by Zoom. I change this messy background into my bench behind me, and I actually make it look like I'm in court, and it's been working pretty well. I mean, it misses a lot of things, but in the moment, we're making it work.
Well, and what that means for people who may not be familiar with these judicials, because they don't get as much attention, they aren't necessarily as sexy or whatever, but because you are a judge and you are running for a judicial seat, you have to adhere to judicial conduct rules, so you are not going to be as foul-mouthed or sour as me and Lillian today, right?
No, probably not. And I was even assured by you that maybe you'd even be a little more PG-13 than usual. So we'll see. We'll see if you can hold to it. We'll see.
I still might talk some smack about Justice Hecht, but that's fine.
Justice Hecht, if I remember right, he was the guy who tried to make sure Harriet Myers got on the Supreme Court when Bush was in power. Is that right?
That is right. He's actually, it's a long story with my opponent, but he's actually been on the bench. He's been on the Supreme Court for 32 years. He was one of Karl Rove's original clients in the state of Texas. When Republicans finally started winning statewide, he was the first one to win. And so he was part of Karl Rove's original plan to bring Republican power to Texas. And I always say it started with Nathan Hecht, and we're going to end it with him too.
So he's been on the court since before I was born.
Yes. Well, if you're not yet 30, he's been on the bench. He was a trial judge in Dallas for 4 years, and then he was on the Fifth Court of Appeals in Dallas. So he's actually been on the bench for about 40 years. And he can't serve his full term because in Texas, the Constitution in Texas says you have to retire at the age of 75. So he's running for a partial term because he'll turn 75 in the middle of his term if he were to win. Harriet Myers thing, before I go, Harriet Myers thing, yes, he was the judge who is friends with Harriet Myers. And when George Bush initially nominated her to be a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court, he went on 100 talk shows and talked to everybody about how she was conservative enough, that she was pro-life enough for the right to be able to support her. Now, that didn't end up working out, but he was her biggest proponent during all of that.
I completely forgot about Harriet.
She would have been terrible, by the way.
She would have been terrible. Pretty normal by today's standards.
No, I mean, I would take her now.
We'll trade you Kavanaugh for Harriet Myers.
All day long.
So sorry, 2006, Kendall. Okay,
oh
so
my gosh.
People who don't follow a lot of this, we don't know a lot about, I admittedly don't know a lot about the Supreme Court. Why does it matter to have a Democrat as the Chief Justice of the Court?
Well, we do run in partisan elections in Texas. Let me say, so these courts, both the Texas Supreme Court, which is the civil side of our highest benches, and the Court of Criminal Appeals, which is the criminal cases, they've been all Republican for 22 years. And so they've lacked balance, they've lacked dissenting voices, they've lacked diverse voices. They've both been very monolithic. And so I think what we're seeing is a lack of diversity of thought. And wherever you come from on the political spectrum, wherever you come from in legal theory, we don't have that. We've had a lot of judges deciding cases the same way, deciding which cases they will decide, and then having maybe small disagreements on the margins. But the big ideas in the law haven't really been decided at this court. They've been decided at the U.S. Supreme Court. We may not like how the U.S. Supreme Court rules on things, but at least it's a court where there are disparate voices. There are people who have different ideas. We haven't had that on this court for a long time. And so it's been 9-0 Republican for 22 years. The Chief Justice position in particular has some really important roles constitutionally and in the statutes in Texas. They do you are the head of an entire branch of government. So essentially, there are judicial agencies like the State Bar of Texas, the Office of Court Administration. There are judicial councils and judicial committees, all of which the Chief Justice has a huge role in deciding who's on those committees and the vision of the Texas judiciary. So it's an awesome responsibility when I went in November, but it's one that I'm excited to take on because I think for the state of Texas, we really need a judiciary that looks like the people we serve, and that begins to have a voice for the changing ideas and the changing face of Texas.
I love what you say about diversity of thought. And that's part of our problem with our elected officials, where whenever you see these responses, it's all four white old guys. Yeah. And that's, is it all white old guys?
Well, as much as I want to see Brandi Voss on the Supreme Court one day, I'm just saying, like, I don't know that I want all Democrats on the Supreme Court even. I'm a partisan hack. So, like, the idea that there's no dissenting voice, period, is ridiculous.
It gives you better decision. I mean, it's proven in the science that when you have diversity at the table, you get better decision making. Everybody knows that. But here in Texas, what's it going to take to win for you? Is it just people to stay on the ballot and get to you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's a thing. Texas is one big political science experiment this year because we've gotten rid of straight ticket voting. We have all these judicial races all the way down the ballot. And so I think both sides, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, are spending all of their efforts in this idea that vote all the way down the ballot, vote up and down the ballot for every Democrat. They're doing that on the Republican side too. And so the main thing is making sure that people know in this moment, if they're fed up, if they are concerned about their democracy, if they're concerned about their institutions, there is no straight ticket voting. And so they just need to keep voting for as long as they can, all the way down the ballot. Channel that energy, channel that frustration, channel that fear, because there's a fair bit of fear in our electorate too, and worry about our democracy and our institutions in this moment, and go to the ballot box and vote every race because it's so important. Now, for me, I'm fifth on the ballot. So it'll go president, Senate, Congress, Railroad Commission, and then you have your statewide court races. And so it's not as huge of an issue. I hope they'll go to number five, but the main thing is we at least need to make sure our voters know that there is no straight ticket voting and we have to keep voting up and down the ballot for all Democrats.
I know that our ballots in Dallas and Houston and Austin are just ridiculously long. In the Brandi, in the Valley, do y'all have ridiculously long ballots too?
Not as long as yours, for sure. I think we have like 12 district courts, and I think we have 8 county courts, and they're not all up on the same cycles. So it's not nearly as long.
I mean,
I think Harris County has the longest ballot in the country.
Right.
So to put that in perspective, they have the longest ballot in the country.
That is just absolutely
really, really hard.
Well, we did, from what I hear, y'all have done your part to shorten our ballots a little bit, and I want to talk about it. We've been talking about this on the show, about this effort to remove these Green Party candidates from the ballots that did not qualify appropriately, to rightfully remove them because they didn't meet qualifications. You were successful at that. We talked earlier about how Republicans have not been as successful to get their libertarians off, which is good news for Democrats. Or what exactly was the process behind that? You were the first one that got yours knocked off. Like what's the story behind it?
With help from my lawyer.
Who was your lawyer?
Brandy Voss, who did some brilliant legal work. I have a team with her and Chad Baruch and Ross Peavy and Kevin Vickers, and they all helped me kind of come up with the strategy. But I had an additional issue, the issue being played out right now, which I'm sure Brandy has talked to you about on the Libertarian and the Green Party side, is there were a bunch of third-party candidates who didn't pay filing fees. And that's the, or didn't pay filing fees and, importantly, didn't get their signatures from voters to get on the ballot. So you have two ways in, either way works, and they did neither. But from my race, what I learned was when we started digging into it is the Green Party opponent on my ballot had actually voted in the Democratic primary back in March. And so it was really an easier black letter law position, which is when you vote in another primary, you can't then show up for another party on the ballot in November. I mean, think that would bring some chaos to the process. Like you go vote as a Republican and then later you show up as the Democratic nominee. I mean, you think of all the kind of downscale effects of that and how strange it could get. So we had a pretty unique situation. A couple other candidates actually had the same situation. Aaron Zwiener, who's a state rep down kind of in our neck of the woods in Hays County. Her opponent had done the same thing, had voted in the Democratic primary. So we pointed that out and our candidates actually withdrew. We had to file a lawsuit for Iris to withdraw, but he eventually, after some great legal work by my lawyer, we got him to just cry uncle and withdraw, which was appropriate. Look, I think as a Democratic Party, we need to be very clear that we don't want to keep people who should be on the ballot off the ballot, because we need more people participating in the process, not less. But we also need people to follow the rules. And that's what I was trying to do with my situation.
Yeah, for sure.
Are you concerned at all about just the vote by mail, chaos, rhetoric that we're all hearing, and you know what the ordinary Texan can do to make sure they do everything that they're supposed to do to make sure we get our folks elected in a fair way? Do you worry about that just as a lawyer and judge?
Yes, don't you? I mean, don't we all? I think, you know, Michelle Obama said it about as best last week as anyone I've heard, which is just, we just gotta vote. Figure it out, have a plan, figure out what you personally are going to do that you can live with, that keeps you safe, and just get to the ballot box however you can get there, whether that's vote by mail, whether that's showing up early. You know, there's processes now in Travis County, and I think some of the other clerks around the state are doing this too, where if you can't put it in the mail, they're making sure voters know the right way to get it back to the clerk or the elections administrator to do vote by mail that way, because now there's all this concern about the mail. I want to say a little bit about the vote by mail opinion, which my opponent wrote back in May, because my fellow judge here on the Travis County District Court bench, Judge Shulock, who's been my colleague for 10 years, he had a case where he took evidence and he granted a temporary injunction that the Democratic Party was asking for that would have allowed anyone who didn't have a COVID immunity to request a mail-in ballot. And then the Court of Appeals in Houston upheld that ruling. And then Attorney General Paxton filed an emergency petition for mandamus to the Texas Supreme Court to undo all of that, and sort of in a strange procedural process, asked the court to rule. And then my opponent, yeah, And then my opponent, they deny the mandamus. They said, we're not going to tell these clerks what to do, but we're going to write opinions on vote by mail anyway. And the Texas statute has three ways that you can vote by mail. You can be out of the county, one. The election code says the other way you can vote by mail is if you're over the age of 65. And the third way is if you have a physical condition, a disability that would not allow you to vote by mail, that would not allow you to vote in person safely. And so the Democratic Party was arguing that prong in a pandemic where we're all sort of facing a public health crisis, that should allow everyone to vote by mail. And the chief's opinion, my opponent's opinion, basically said, I'm actually going to read the exact statement he said because I want people to see it and I don't want to get it, hear it, and I don't want to get it wrong. He actually said, I have this somewhere, but for the population overall, contracting COVID-19 in general is highly improbable.
Are you kidding me?
Is that what he said?
Wow. That's in the opinion. And then he said,
it's a stupid freaking opinion.
And then he said, and this is, by the way, when one of the fellow justices on the court actually had COVID. So,
And after allegedly following all the safety protocols, she said on Twitter that we've been careful and I have COVID. Okay.
How improbable.
Yeah. So she,
the board's smiting her.
And then they give this opinion that has added confusion. And it's why everybody's confused. It's basically like lack of COVID immunity alone isn't enough to request a vote by mail ballot. But I mean, and there's all this about, is it the mind of the voter or is it the mind of the prosecutor? Right. And so what you saw immediately after this was the attorney general then starts basically doing his promotion saying, if you vote by mail improperly, I'll prosecute you. And the truth is they might, because there's a woman sitting in jail still in Fort Worth who they prosecuted a few years ago who voted by mistake and they still have prosecuted her for a felony. And so they're using it to scare people. They're using it as a tool. Now, I don't think the opinion says that. I don't want to give people legal advice, and I know Brandy doesn't want to either. The opinion's just unclear. And when I talk about it and I do my critique of the opinion, what I don't like about it is it's added to that confusion, and it's added to that people don't really know the answer. And there's just enough vagueness to allow the AG to go about and do his voter suppression tactics.
I mean, well, especially in light of the Postal Service, you had that confusion from the opinion, and then now we have I don't trust the U.S. Post Office today, and so I'm not recommending any of the people in my life to go vote by mail. I'm asking them to go because I think if we don't show up, the Post Office, we could maybe not know who our next elected leaders are for months and months. And the idea, I'd rather encourage people to go and vote than to have four more years of Donald Trump. I just, as someone who's done public health and seeing this ridiculousness, this guy really wants to screw up these elections. He's president. So anyway, that's me, but.
It's made confusion where clarity would really make everyone feel better. As a political point, and I don't want to talk about the opinion when I say this, I don't understand the Republican Party position on this. I actually think their voters would appreciate being able to vote by mail too. Like, that's the thing that's confounding. No one's really ever shown me the data that it would hurt them if people can vote by mail or if it's promoted more. They just want to be against it because they're trying everything to keep people from voting rather than get people to vote. And well, it's disappointing.
At the same time that they're telling everyone to stop voting by mail and how dangerous it is, they're sending texts and emails and letters to telling their people to file and get their applications to vote by mail.
That's right.
I'm over it. Well,
we sure want you to win. So
Judge,
what can we do to make you win? Other people need to send you money. People need to vote for you. People need to stay on the ballot. You're fifth, so you don't have that problem. We just need everybody out there voting for you.
Where can people go if they wanted to support you or your campaign or learn a little bit more about Judge Amy Clark Meacham?
So I have a Facebook page and an Instagram page for the campaign. Judge Amy Clark Meacham for Chief Justice. I have a website, and you can learn a lot more about me at my website, amymeacham.com. And then, you know, I think what's going to happen here in these last couple of months, as we get closer to November, is we're going to roll out some digital ads. We're going to roll out, you know, some intro to me, because all of us, we're junkies, right? And we're living this and we're paying attention. And it's sometimes hard to wrap our brains around the fact that some people haven't even thought about it yet. Right. they aren't even going to think about it until middle of October. Mm-hmm. Some of them might not think about it until Halloween. And so we just got to make sure we message to those voters. And so we're going to roll out some digital ads, introductory pieces. At this point, it feels weird having campaigned for a year to introduce yourself to voters. But that's really the point right now, is we've got to introduce me to voters. We've got to make people understand that courts are important. Not just the issues they're deciding right now, but the issues like school finance and redistricting that they could decide in the future. And we just need to make sure people know the stakes.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, that's just huge. Well, we really appreciate you taking time to come on the show today, but you don't get to leave yet, because before you go, you have to play everyone's favorite segment. It's called Obsessed. For each of us, we're going to talk about one news story from the week, whether it was politics or it wasn't, that we've been completely obsessed with. And as always, we have to start this segment with Lillian Salerno. Lillian, what is something this week that you've been completely obsessed with?
I've been obsessed with the March of Time, I guess. August 28th, 1963 was when Martin Luther King had the March on Washington. And today in D.C., so that's 63 years ago, they're marching on Washington, and they had set it way back, like last March, for the killing by of Jacob Blake, and before the Black Lives Matter, and before Portland. And it just seems so, I don't know, sort of unreal that people were already thinking to do this, and then now more than ever after last night's Republican convention, using the White House as a prop, seeing thousands of people on the mall today was, it was good, but it's also just so poignant of, we just not getting better. We got to get better. So that's my obsess. Sorry, it's sort of sad. But it's been a sad week. This Republican convention has been just horrific for people that believe in truth and justice.
I mean, how is D.C. not a COVID epicenter right now? Between the convention and this march, I mean, I just feel like it's...
Well, they may be. They don't know it, but
well, yeah. We'll get there. Good obsessed, Lillian Salerno. Depressing obsessed. Brandi Voss, what is something this week you've been completely obsessed with?
So I'm so excited to do this, because this is my favorite part of your show every week. I listen to every podcast while I'm cleaning my house. So my obsessed this week is with the Conway family, Kellyanne Conway and George and their daughter, Claudia, who is 15. She's a year younger than my daughter. And so everybody knows Kellyanne is one of Trump's top advisors, and George is a Republican pundit and has co-founded the Lincoln Project, which is actively against Trump. And so then they have their daughter who is 15, and she calls herself a radical agnostic liberal leftist. And so her Twitter, sometimes it's hilarious, sometimes it's heartbreaking. But she, you know, with respect to her dad, she has said, and I'm paraphrasing, she said, you know, my dad and I don't agree on everything, but we do both agree that Trump needs to go. So please stop standing my dad. And so I'm looking at this tweet, and I go to my daughter, and this has prompted lots of conversations between my daughter and I. And I show her this, and I say, what does standing mean? And she goes, you know, Stan the fan. And I was like, no. She says, well, Stan is like an Uber fan. So if you are standing someone, then you're like an obsessed fan. You know, you're always standing Beto. And I was like, Ella, you're right. I am always standing Beto. but then you look at what she's been saying about her mom, And she was actually encouraging the RNC to play the new Cardi B song, WAP, like when her mom walked out on the stage. And then she said, you know, she was going to emancipate herself. Wow. And that she basically can't stand waking up in the morning and seeing her mom standing next to a homophobe. And that part of it to me is heartbreaking, you know, for her to feel that anger towards her own mother. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, as a mom, I feel like I have a responsibility to like teach my daughter, but I really try to, you know, be Socratic with her and just ask her questions and not impose what I, you know, what I believe on her. But it from the things that Claudia is saying to the media, she feels like it's just being ramped down her throat. And that
I follow her on TikTok, and I mean, you're right, sometimes it's hilarious and sometimes it's so sad, but I think all of us can kind of relate to it. Mm-hmm. At some point with having a family member you feel you've lost because of Donald Trump, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the cult a bit, you know. But now yeah, they're all off Twitter and they've all are taking a leave of absence.
Right.
Yeah,
Kellyanne stepped down or is going to step down at the end of August, and George is stepping away from the Lincoln Project to focus on their family.
That's a really good obsession, yeah. Brandi Loss. That's a really
But those kind of things always intrigue me because I'm always trying to, you know, learn from experiences so that I can do better with my daughter. And unfortunately, my daughter's a little Democrat. Yay. By her own choosing.
Imagine having to wake up with Kellyanne Conway as your mom every day.
Yeah,
she's under a cult spell.
Yeah, you know? Well, hopefully she'll drink the Kool-Aid soon. Great obsessed.
Thank you.
Judge Amy Clark Meacham, what is something this week you've been completely obsessed with?
But before I do that, I want to say two things about what Brandi said. I have 14-year-old twin daughters, and I also had to ask them what standing meant because I thought it meant the absolute opposite of what it said. Like, I was like, I thought it was saying the other, like, stop putting my dad down. So I'm glad we got that clear because I was also confused. So, and then the other thing was Brandi said she listens to y'all when she cleans her house. Clearly, that is not something that I do, the cleaning of the house. I follow the Ann Richards epitaph advice, which is I didn't want my epitaph to read, she kept a clean house. So clearly, I'm doing that well. And I just wanted to point that out for anybody who watches this on YouTube. As for something I'm obsessed with, I don't have something. I could say the flags at the White House at the Republican National Convention, because as awful as it is, all the flags did look kind of nice. It was sad what was happening, but they looked pretty. That's all we can say about them. But my obsession for you guys is I'm using this new app, and I know there's a lot of candidates who listen to y'all, and I want to say I'm using this new app called Numero. It's a fundraising app, and it's just come out kind of this past year, and I hate fundraising. So I'll say it's so hard. I'm better at it now than I used to be. But it's hard for me, a girl raised from Lorena, Texas, of somewhat modest means, to call people up and ask them for money. But Numero makes it a little bit easier. And it also has a great background story and have some of my other obsessions too, because its first client was Katie Porter. And I'm a big Katie Porter fan from Congress. And she actually became the first client when she defeated the founder of Numero in her Democratic primary. His name is Brian Ford. So it's a great sort of Democratic primary. They were bad. They battled, but then she called him up when it was over and she's like, how did you raise so much more money than me? And he was like, because I have an app. And so Katie Porter now uses that app and we're trying to use it too. It's an easier way to raise money. It makes it a little like, it gives me no excuses, and candidates need no excuses. For anybody who works with candidates, you know, we need no excuse fundraising, and Numero makes it a little easier for the candidate and really gives us no excuses either. So anyway, that's my current
getting session. Creative on that tech stuff, I think, is what's going to save a lot of our organizing stuff, man. I mean, we've just got to keep getting creative, keep cranking that tech out.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I can't wait to look at it. I don't know about it, but
looking at Numero, good obsessed. Justice Amy Clark Meacham, Democratic nominee for the Chief Justice of the Texas Supreme Court. My obsessed this week is that I couldn't believe this week I found another human who yells more and louder than I do in Kimberly Guilfoyle. Guys, I tried to watch this convention. I really did. Like, I had like my heart in it, and I was like, I'm gonna see what they like so much. I got to Kimberly Guilfoyle's speech after she shouted at me for a solid 10 minutes, which I guess now I know how y'all feel at the end of every episode. And after it was done, I just turned it off. I just couldn't do it anymore. There's no way. She literally said, if you vote for Joe Biden, you'll have used heroin needles in your public parks. I mean, how more dystopian and ridiculous could you be? I cannot believe that people actually take her seriously. And the fact that there's another human that yells more and louder than me, it's what I have been completely obsessed with this week.
She was terrible, but I forgot that she was married to Gavin Newsom, the governor of California. How did that ever happen in the universe?
She got real scorned and just completely
I mean, how are you married to Gavin Newsom and then you end up with a Trump? But it's just
crazy. In fairness to Kimberly Guilfoyle, here's kind of what I thought when I was watching it. It reminded me of when I was at the convention in 2012 in Charlotte, and Jennifer Granholm spoke about saving the auto industry. And she had this really big thing where she was like, and get this country moving again. It was like way over the top. And everybody in the hall was looking at each other like, holy cow, she was incredible. And then we went and turned on the TV and like everybody was talking about how crazy she looked and said it. There's just a different style of speaking in a convention hall versus speaking, you know, one-on-one to a camera. And when there's no one in the convention, they set her up to fail. I mean, they put her in a hall. She delivered a speech as if she was in a hall with no audience. And she looked like a nutcase. Anyways, that's what I've been completely obsessed with this week. And that was Obsessed! If you have something that you've been obsessed with this week, make sure to send your video of 30 seconds or fewer to info@podblesstexas.com. We might play it on the next show. info@podblesstexas.com.
And Amy and Brandy, thank y'all so much for joining us today. Y'all just great. And I'm so excited about you winning. Wow, that's going to be great.
Polling shows us neck and neck. That's my last little tidbit. Polling shows us neck and neck. So okay. We really do have a chance. And we really need all of the help from all the great Democrats out there to make it happen.
And so people can write you big, big, fat checks, right?
No. Limit. Yes, no if limit. They want to. Okay. Learn more at amymeacham.com. Thank you.
Amymeacham.com. That's where they would go to do that. And again, this seat is so important, not just for, you know, everything the court does, but also because redistricting's around the corner, guys. We got to elect some Dems on this court.
Yeah, we need you to lead that court. And Brandy, if people want to follow you and your career and what you're doing next, where
would I'm on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Just look for Brandy Voss.
All right. Great. Cool.
If people want to follow you, Lillian, where are they going to do that?
They can follow me through Podless Texas or under Twitter at Lillian_Salerno. And how about you?
People can follow me on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Snapchat, on LinkedIn, on TikTok, on whatever social media platform is near you, at Kendall Scudder. Or, of course, you can always follow us at Podless Texas on all of your social media apps.
And thanks, everybody, for joining us on Podless Texas. And from Kendall and I and our group, have a blessed week.
See you soon.